Ever since the issue of sexism in language was identified by feminists, many people have struggled to get their usage in sync with their politics. Our language commentator Jeffrey Nunberg has some reflections on this contemporary problem.
Not long ago, I was writing a memo to try to get some students to help in running a conference we were holding at my university. I had just written, "We need students to man the registration desks," when I stopped in my tracks. Did I really want to say, "to man the desks," or was that just the English language talking? I was certainly hoping that the women students would cooperate as well as the men, and so I went scrambling for a synonym. Obviously, it made no sense to ask for students to person the registration desks. And if I'd asked for students to people the registration desks, I would have run the risk of encouraging lewd conduct among the undergraduates. After a moment, I came up with the obvious substitute: we need students to work the registration desks. And then, bathed in the glow of self-satisfied liberalism, I went on to write the next sentence: a total of about 10 man-hours of work will be involved. Then I sent the memo out without another thought. I tell you, it's a minefield out there. The grammar and vocabulary of English are strewn with expressions that reflect traditional preconceptions about gender roles. By now, of course, most of us have become self-conscious about some of these, like the use of man and mankind to mean humanity, or the great English pronoun dilemma. Should it be everyone must pay his taxes, or everyone must pay his or her taxes, or everyone must pay their taxes, or what? But I'd never realized how widespread the phenomenon was until I came upon a little book called The Handbook of Non-Sexist Writing by Casey Miller and Kate Swift, which was published in 1980 by Harper and Row. I confess that it had never occurred to me before to ask whether there was anything sexist in referring to something as the largest man-made structure in the Western Hemisphere, or in saying that a candidate had a lot of appeal to the man on the street. Nor had I ever given any thought to the assumptions inherent in expressions like craftsmanship and brotherhood. So what's a fella to do? Miller and Swift argue that all these expressions reflect outmoded conceptions of gender roles, and that they all have to go. In many cases, they're surely right. It takes a certain insensitivity nowadays to say something like, "these works appeal to the common man," when you could just as easily say "the common person" and avoid an ambiguity in the process. But as a matter of general principle, we don't always have to be slaves to etymology. We don't notice any contradiction when people talk about dialing a number on a push-button phone, for example. And people still talk about going to the five-and-dime store, even though they don't enter one without making sure they've got a couple of 20s in their wallet. For that matter, we're not shocked when a maid service sends over a man to do the cleaning. And we have no trouble referring to a temperamental male as a prima donna, even though the expression originally meant leading lady. By the same token, I don't see why we shouldn't be able to say that a woman has a real sense of sportsmanship, or that she has a good layman's grasp of economics. I guess I don't think of the word sportsmanship and layman as having any particularly masculine connotations nowadays, and I don't want to lose either of them because they have no exact synonyms. In the end, I suspect that most people stumble through the problem as I do, taking each word as it comes. As a result, it's likely that the English we speak 100 years from now will still contain plenty of expressions that bear the marks of origin in a male-dominated culture. I would guess that we'll still be using phrases like no man's land, unsportsmanlike conduct, and man-made. But I don't know that this matters so much, as long as we think of this residue as a collection of quaint reminders of the unenlightened times when our language evolved.
Jeffrey Nunberg is a linguist associated with the Center for the Study of Language and Information at Stanford University.